Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. A tale as old as time, or is it? Today on Advanced. Hello, listeners. Happy February 28th. You've made it toward the end of the month. It's good to have you back with us through our animals lesson. Of course, I have Gabe with me again to finish up this article.
Well, Garrett, it is great to be here. Let's talk about herons.
Right, herons. There are so many different species of birds. It feels like sometimes it's kind of hard to keep up with them all.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, as I maybe had implied yesterday, I don't really follow animals a whole lot as far as like knowing what's going on in the animal world. But one of the things that crossed my mind is, you know, we've got fewer and fewer species these days just because animals are getting endangered and maybe even going extinct.
Absolutely. Now, there was one time I was looking up a list of books for all young men to read before they die.
Oh?
I found it to be a really interesting list. And one book really stuck out, and I read the whole thing. And I actually learned a lot about birds from it.
Which?
It's the original Boy Scouts handbook.
Oh.
This is, I think, more than 100 years old now. And they were really into bird watching back then. I was never a Boy Scout. I don't know if that's part of the regular curriculum for people in 2025. But, of course, in the U.S., we do have a whole organization of people who are avid bird watchers called the Audubon Society.
Oh, I didn't know about this.
Yeah.
I know. Bird watching, that's kind of a hobby a lot of people have, or maybe even more than a hobby for some people.
Yeah, I always found that really interesting. I don't know much about it, but you get a sense of kind of the place in which you live. I've known people in the city where we are now that can kind of identify different birds and maybe kind of can sense changes throughout the years. And in some ways, I feel like because we don't have kind of that knowledge today, we're a little removed from nature around us, even the nature that is present in the city.
Yeah, you're right. Earlier this month, I was having a discussion with Simon here on Advanced about ChatGPT and just how we're so reliant on AI tools these days and technology. And I think, you know, one price that we pay is not getting out in nature enough and not really understanding the natural world around us. And there's just so much richness that is out there.
Absolutely. Well, before we start up, I do have a question to get us talking. My question today is, what is an environment in which you thrive? Of course, that's a pretty open-ended question, but Gabe, I'll leave it to you to see how you want to answer.
Yeah, I appreciate your questions, Garrett, because they are open-ended. Yeah, what's an environment in which I thrive? I'm a pretty social person, you know, love conversations, and I think that when I'm in a setting, it could be at work or it could just be hanging out with people, and the conversation just goes so many different directions and new ideas are created and people are just sharing really interesting information. Like, I feel like that's a setting in which I really thrive as a person, and I feel more energized coming away from those kinds of situations and settings. Yeah. What about you, Garrett?
I feel like there's not one answer.
Mm-hmm.
I do think for me, I'm a very introverted person,
mm-hmm.
which if you've seen me or me interacting with Gabe on some of our programs, you might not know, because I love being up on stage or in front of the camera, especially sharing things that I'm passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And I love sharing in front of all of you listeners and a lot of people. At the same time, I also thrive just in kind of the quiet of an office or my office back home, just kind of researching things or reading a book. That really inspires me as well. And so I feel like I need a variety of those things.
Yeah, we actually all need a variety, but it is good to know kind of what makes you tick personally and what makes you thrive, because it is, you know, we're all different.
Absolutely. All right, friends, what makes herons different? That that is what we're digging into today. We learned quite a bit yesterday. We learned about their special interactions and even facultative relationship with the red wolves at a zoo in Chicago. We're going to talk about that some more today. Let's jump into it.
The wolf species still exists, but is critically endangered, partly because wolves in the wild often mate with coyotes and produce hybrid offspring. That has led to low genetic diversity and weak evolutionary fitness. Just under 20 red wolves exist in their wild native habitats today. The captive breeding population is around 240 that live in 45 facilities across the country. A tale of ecological success. On the robust branches of a red maple, a dozen or so nests support some 20 black-crowned night herons. This is one of their absolute favorite trees, Adams said. They love gathering sticks from elm and oak trees outside the zoo, but mostly nest on zoo property. This beautiful understory, I'm sure, also makes them feel a lot more at home. A lot safer, Adams said. One of the reasons that we think they came to settle here, of course they have the protection of the red wolves and the black bears, is this is really a beautiful recreation of a more natural Illinois woodland ecosystem. All of the trees that are planted back here are either indigenous to Illinois or are naturalized species.
Well, at the beginning of our discussion today, we're focusing not on the herons, but actually on the wolves. This wolf species, again, it is red wolves, still exists, but it's critically endangered. There are not a lot of them out there. And I know that's true for a lot of different wolves. There are a lot of efforts underway, especially in the U.S., to bring back a lot of wolves into the wild. I know people have mixed opinions on that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And here we see that part of the reason, or one reason, that this species is critically endangered is because these wolves will often find mates that are not conducive to reproducing in the future.
Yeah, well, they mate with coyotes and they produce hybrid offspring. Mm-hmm. Hybrid here, we're not talking about cars. Hybrid means two different things kind of mixed together. Sometimes you get the best of both worlds. Well, here, what you get between a red wolf and a coyote is neither a red wolf or a coyote, but right. Something totally different.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of when horses will mate with a donkey, and then you get a mule.
Absolutely.
And the mule cannot reproduce afterwards.
Yeah. So sometimes there really are drawbacks that happen in that resulting offspring. Well, one of the things you will get, no matter what the offspring is like, is that pure kind of red wolf will slowly start to disappear as you get these hybrid offspring. And that leads to low genetic diversity and weak evolutionary fitness. So they're not able to compete quite so well against other kinds of animals out there in the market that is the wild.
That's right. It might make you think of the idea of the survival of the fittest. It's only the fittest animals or species that are going to survive in the long run. And this is one reason why these wolves are critically endangered.
Yeah. So, Gabe, how many of them are there?
This is kind of crazy to me. Just under 20 red wolves exist in their wild native habitats today. How do we know that?
Yeah, that was my question too. I know sometimes scientists will capture a wild animal, kind of tag it, mm-hmm. maybe with GPS trackers or something like that, and then let it back out into the wild. So we might be keeping track of these 20. Of course, there could be others that we don't know about.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Who knows?
Hopefully there are others we don't know about, right? But we read the captive breeding population is around 240 that live in 45 facilities across the country. So thankfully, they're not just out in the wild, but people are doing something to kind of help keep these wolves around.
Yeah, and these wolves are captive, or they've been captured. They've been taken in against their will by people, but of course people have good intentions to try and help them and make sure that these wolves can continue to exist on into the future. And we see there is a tale of ecological success. We'll talk about what exactly that means as we move into this next section. And we get kind of an interesting picture of what we see in this enclosure.
That's right. We see here on the robust branches of a red maple, that's short for red maple tree, I'm assuming, a dozen or so nests support some 20 black-crowned night herons. And let's talk about that word robust because, you know, something that's robust is very strong. It's not likely to break at all.
Yeah, so that's true of the branches of this red maple tree. And we get these herons resting there. It's one of their absolute favorite trees. Again, we hear that from this wildlife management coordinator at the zoo. They love gathering sticks from elm and oak trees outside the zoo, but mostly nest on zoo property. Again, they really love to hang out at this zoo. And in our next paragraph here, we have an interesting word that I misunderstood when I read it first.
So did I.
Yeah.
So when you first see this word, friends, maybe when you first read this sentence, what did you think? We see this beautiful understory, I'm sure, also makes them feel a lot more at home. When I think of an understory, or just the word itself, makes me think of like a backstory, you know, like the background to something to understand it better. But
oh,
that's not
like
what
that.
We're talking about here at all.
Yeah, that's not even where my mind went. I was thinking of in a story or a TV show or a movie, you have the main plot, mm-hmm. but then you have other like smaller plots happening kind of concurrently there. Mm-hmm. Maybe the main thing is like a war scene or something happening in a company, but then you also have kind of a romance plot kind
that's
of
right.
running underneath
and
it.
And often in a movie or a book, we'll call that a subplot. And we won't call it an understory.
Yeah, it's
not
called
what
an understory.
Means. Yeah.
That's not a term for that. Understory describes something completely different. Gabe, what is it?
Yeah, this is cool. I learned something new today, friends. I like to learn new things. But this is a layer of plants and bushes that grows under the canopy of a forest. So it's not on the ground. It's not those leaves, the fallen leaves on the ground. It's that layer just beneath the top layer. The top layer is called the canopy, and it's basically all the branches and leaves that are up there that you could probably see from the ground as well.
Yeah, I loved learning about nature and animals growing up as a kid, especially with picture books. Mm-hmm. And one of the most fascinating things was learning about the rainforest mm-hmm. and kind of the different levels different animals exist in. And really, it's all about height there because the trees are really tall, but different animals live at different levels of those trees. Like you said, you have the top canopy.
Yeah.
If you get to the top of that, you can see the sky. But there are so many other levels to there, a lot of understory mm-hmm. that animals are able to hide in, maybe find food, and try and find prey, of course.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a really good point. Different types of animals that live in different levels up there. But we read here, you know, back to our lesson, it also makes them feel a lot more at home. That's a great word or a great phrase to know. It kind of means just feeling comfortable in a place, almost like you are in your own home.
Yeah, so these herons feel at home. They feel a lot safer. One of the reasons that we think they came to settle here, of course, they have the protection of the red wolves and the black bears. So we hear that there's another animal in the area that is also offering some protection. And it's a really beautiful recreation of a more natural Illinois woodland ecosystem. So it sounds like these are all animals that probably would have been originally interacting in the wilds of Illinois.
Yeah, that's right. But here they are in captive. But they, you know, as we read in our lesson, kind of had this recreated environment that we could say mimics their natural habitat.
Yeah. All of the trees that are planted back here are either indigenous to Illinois or are naturalized species. And so they're really trying to recreate kind of the area around this. Often zoos can feel very artificial. You go to a zoo in, I don't know, in Los Angeles, but you're seeing polar bears. Of course, that doesn't feel very natural. It's exciting, but it doesn't reflect the area around it.
Yeah, no, this is, and you know, reading this sentence in particular, this section just made me want to visit the Chicago Zoo and see how good of a job they're doing at this.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Illinois?
I drove through Chicago once on the way to a friend's wedding, but that was it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'd be interesting too. All of my family from like my grandparents' generation on both sides is all from Illinois. Hmm. And I've never been close to there.
Really?
So someday we'll see. Well, friends, we have more to learn. So let's jump into the rest of our article.
Both male and female parents share roles and switch duties, including foraging for food, incubating the eggs, and rearing the chicks, which tend to start fledging in June. In fact, nesting and rearing season involves whole colonies. Individuals will assist in the rearing of chicks that may not necessarily be their own, Adam said. At a particular time, when all the chicks are fledged, they're all climbing around the tree. They all kind of need support, and sometimes we see non-parent herons helping out. The birds' reliance on their own, as well as on other creatures, indicates a flourishing community and larger ecological success. We think of urban spaces as not necessarily being the most hospitable areas to wildlife, but we have, right in front of us, this beautiful example of when habitat is created with wildlife in mind. Even endangered species can thrive in urban areas, Adam said.
All right. Thank you to Linda for helping us read the article today. Well, we're learning about some family dynamics now with the herons. Of course, that's always interesting with humans, but animals also have some family interaction, right, Gabe?
Well, at least with this species, they do. Yeah, I don't usually think about family interaction with animals. Maybe, you know, the fact
penguins.
That penguins, yeah, or maybe the fact that like a lion is like loyal to his pride. He has many wives, but yeah, at least he has a pride.
A little different from how we choose to live our lives.
Right. But yeah, so male and female parents share roles and switch duties, including foraging for food. The idea of foraging is going out and just looking for food. You're not sure where it's going to come from, and so you're foraging.
Yeah, when we're talking about kind of primitive peoples or people from a long time ago before farming, we're often talking about kind of a couple different jobs, foraging or sometimes called gathering. And the other side of that would be like hunting, trying to kill animals. Both of those would provide food for the people. Well, of course, animals need to forage as well, and they need to incubate the eggs.
That's right. So the idea of incubating is providing a safe and usually warm place for something like an egg to be able to, or the animal inside the egg to be able to grow.
Yeah, you can think of that kind of classic picture of a hen kind of laying on her eggs in a little basket. That's what helps those eggs to be in a good place to be able to develop so that eventually a little baby chick can come out.
And sometimes we even use this word incubator, not only to talk about animals or something you might find in a hospital to help a very young person, an infant at that stage, but also as like a business, right? So like maybe a business that helps other businesses start and get their start in the business world.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. Okay. Well, they help to incubate the eggs and rear the chicks. That's another word that we can use for humans as well. They help to raise them, to teach them what they need to know, maybe to feed them and to get them ready to live their adult lives. These chicks tend to start fledging in June. That's a very specific word that we use for birds.
Yeah, it's great. This is just, you know, getting the feathers that you need to be able to fly eventually. So for some reason, this word always makes me think of the word fledgling.
Right.
That's a very different word. You add an L after the G, it becomes fledgling. That just describes something that is like new and probably weak and vulnerable, and it hasn't become well established yet. But here we're talking about birds starting to fledge in June.
Yeah, I imagine a fledgling would also describe a bird that is starting to fledge.
That's right.
It's just starting to get ready, growing those feathers, can't quite fly yet. It's still very vulnerable. We see this happens in June. In fact, nesting and rearing season involves whole colonies. So it really is a group effort to rear these little babies, to get them ready. And they do all of that in the safety of this zoo under the purview or the watchful eyes of the wolves.
That's right. So that's what's going on here. I actually really like this section because there's a lot of words that are specific to either birds or, you know, animals or maybe raising, like the words forage, for example, incubate. Rearing, as Garrett said, we could talk about rearing children as well, that is raising them, or fledging.
Yeah. Okay, we see another quote from Adams. Individuals will assist in the rearing of chicks that may not necessarily be their own. These little chicks have some aunties and uncles that like to help out. At a particular time when all the chicks are fledged, they're all climbing around the tree, they all kind of need support. And sometimes we see non-parent herons helping out.
Well, there you go. It takes a village to raise a child, and I guess the same is true out in nature.
I was trying to think of that phrase, and I'm glad you thought of it. It didn't come to mind just now. Well, the bird's reliance on their own, as well as on other creatures, indicates a flourishing community and larger ecological success. So we're seeing some great things as these birds really succeed and thrive. And we had a great word to describe that in here.
That's right, flourishing. Flourish always makes me think of the word flower. I think these words are related, I'm not sure. But the idea with a flower or other plants, if it's going well, is that it's able to grow in a healthy and strong way. That's the idea with flourishing.
Yeah. Sometimes we'd even use that to describe whole communities. Mm-hmm. A community is flourishing. The economics of it is going really well. There are new businesses. People are leading happy and productive lives. Let's finish up. We have one more piece to our article here. We think of urban spaces as not necessarily being the most hospitable areas to wildlife, but we have right in front of us this beautiful example of when habitat is created with wildlife in mind. Even endangered species can thrive in urban areas.
Yeah, so let's talk about a few things here, right? Because there's a very important word, a word I like a lot anyway, and that's the word hospitable here. We think of urban spaces, that is, spaces within a city. We don't necessarily think of them being the most hospitable to wildlife. And hospitable is describes an environment in which things can grow. Yes, that is one way to think about it. But when it comes to humans, you know, being hospitable is a value, it's a virtue that I think a lot of cultures around the world have, and that is the idea of welcoming people either into your home or into your community and serving them in a way that makes them feel comfortable and at home.
Yeah, keep in mind, even though it looks similar, we're not talking about the word hospital here.
Mm-hmm.
They might have similar origins, but a more similar one is, yeah, hospitable or hospitality is
That's
the
right.
word that I was thinking of.
Yeah, we even have like hospitality services referring to usually the restaurant or hotel industries.
Yeah, just the idea, you know, it could be through giving someone something, a meal to eat or a bed to sleep on. But the main idea is, yeah, like Gabe said, you're being welcoming. You're making someone feel comfortable. This atmosphere here at the zoo, it seems to be hospitable to these birds. even though we don't think of urban spaces as hospitable.
That's right. So this is a great example, or a beautiful example, of when habitat is created with wildlife in mind. And I want to take just a quick look at that little phrase, to do something with something else in mind, is that you're doing something with that purpose as you're doing it. For example, you like to cook, Garrett.
I love to cook.
Yeah. Yes. So like maybe you cook a dish with your dinner guests in mind. You know exactly the kind of things they like to eat. So you're not just cooking something that you like, you're cooking with them in mind.
That's a good point. I often cook meals with leftovers in mind. I try to have some leftovers for a meal, maybe a lunch the next day. Yeah, it's a great phrase for us to use. All right, friends, that is the article from these last 2 days, this month's Animals Lesson. Hopefully you learned some good words and phrases, and were inspired by the sanctuary these herons have found in this Chicago Zoo. Of course, if you're curious, you can learn a bit more by searching it online.
Well, Garrett, you did ask me if I'd ever been to Illinois. You know, I've only driven through Chicago, as I said, but there are a few things I want to do there now. You know, originally, maybe it was just visiting a friend. I have a friend in Chicago, but also checking out the deep dish pizza, because I think that originated in Chicago, but now I have another reason to go.
All right. Well, friends, for whatever reason you want to go to Chicago, we thank you for joining us. That's all for today. My name is Garrett.
I'm Gabe.
And we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.